information is free. There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Yes, yes.
But
tonight we care.
Here to border
it shows.
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not follow with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Behind the ostensible government sits enthroned an invisible government, owing no allegiance and acknowledging no responsibility to the people. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 149th episode of Media Monarchy. It's Friday the 13th, November 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. For all your news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, change-alluia, Obamasiah, and the Afghan surge, one world warnings, true intentions, global currency, and a new world order, swine flu, strained resistance, crowd control, behavior detection, 9/11 updates, Fort Hood, false flag, the execution of the DC sniper, and so much more. Friday the 13th, November 2009, episode 149 of Media Monarchy.
I wonder if he knows the pleasure that he shows. I can't seem to hide from the sounds around me. I wonder where she goes, dressed up in those clothes. We just watch her drive away. A woman sees her friends, continuous distraction. She fills up the days while she waits to fall on a life in evidence. It's evidently lonely. We all need a tale to tell. Just another consequence of the things that we do. Just another hit of happening that we have to live through. Even at our own means and all the wild we work for, we just want to keep on breathing. My view is compromised with undernourished eyes. They watch and they wait for an altercation. These boxes on the road. It's overpriced to bones, or somebody gives them life. We occupy our space with barriers and fences. There's no line of sight into this protection. Forgive us all the truth, it's just another system. We all need a tale to tell. Just another end of consequence. Thank you.
the Delgados, Keep On Breathing, from their final album, 2004's Universal Audio. Another fantastic Scottish band. They even started the label Chemical Underground, that also put out records by Mogwai and Arab Strap. And you are here on episode 149 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. Giving you all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Trying to give you the tools to help you see the world for the shell game that it is. We're nonpartisan here. The two-party system in the States is a corrupt failure. In the same way we attacked the previous puppet, George Walker Bush, we are attacking the current puppet, Barack Hussein Obama. You thought you were getting change. We're broadcasting live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And of course, thanks to our friends at ZeroPointRadio.com, blasting it out live on 92.3 FM and 1500 AM in snowy Casper, Wyoming. It's 11 AM Mountain Time there. Of course, check out ZeroPointRadio.com. You can hit up the chat. I'm in there right now. It's easy. I should also mention I'm signed into Instant Messenger, up on F-Book. It's all there. The worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, kicking it out 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And we, of course, have Free Radio Olympia out of Washington, Ground Zero Radio out of Canton, Georgia, Berkeley Liberation Radio out of Berkeley, California, 90.7 KWMD, Kisilov, Alaska, thanks to OneSkyRadio.com. So not so sure about Boulder Free Radio. I think they may be down for the time being. And I'll also just use this opportunity to any of the folks, never exactly sure who's playing the show or who's maybe dropped off and isn't playing it anymore. But I implore you, if you were, if you are, if you will, replay MediaMonarchy.com. You just send me an email, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. And of course, F-Book.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Spreading the word any way we can, using open source intelligence, just available out there, in a loose network, and a growing amount of folks getting activated. Not being freaked out and depressed so much by all the bad news, but helping to hopefully empower yourself. Forewarned is forearmed. As I've said many, many times before, if just half of what I say and what we go over on this show is true, you know in your gut we're in trouble. So, of course, it's Friday the 13th, November 2009. It's craptacular here in Portland, Oregon. Another soggy morning. But speaking of water, breaking about 28 minutes ago, water found on moon. there is water on the moon, scientists stated unequivocally, on Friday the 13th, and considerable amounts of it, too. The confirmation of scientists' suspicions is welcome news both to future explorers who might set up home on the lunar surface and dot, dot, dot. So this is, of course, going to blow up over the day. BBC, USA Today, AP, Fox, Miami Herald, New York Times. So this all came from bombing the moon. We are, of course, going to get to that tortured mastermind of 9/11, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, which, of course, Obama announced this morning on his National Lampoon's Asian vacation, that they're going to ship KSM over here to New York for a military tribunal. And it's already starting the rabble-rabble from the fake left and right. Again, this is all predicated on the official story of 9/11 and war based on lies. I believe it's 175 years for former televangelist Tony Alamo. And on, and we, of course, keep an eye peeled on Google News just to see what's snapping while we're doing the show live. So let's get into it. Without further ado, change. Sources say Obama to add 34,000 to Afghan surge. After weeks of meetings with top-ranking officials, CBS News has learned that President Obama is expected to send a substantial amount of additional troops to Afghanistan. Sources tell CBS that Obama plans to completely, or almost completely, fill General Stanley Killer McChrystal's request for 40,000 new troops in Afghanistan. The U.S. would have a total force of more than 100,000 there by the end of 2010, and a large force would remain there long term.
The White House is denying reports that President Obama has reached a decision on troop levels in Afghanistan. But CBS News has learned the administration has settled on a new strategy. CBS News national security correspondent David Martin joins us from the Pentagon with details. David, good morning.
Good morning, Russ. The president still had more meetings scheduled on Afghanistan, but informed sources tell CBS News he intends to give General Stanley McChrystal most, if not all, the additional troops he is asking for. McChrystal wanted 40,000, and the president has tentatively decided to send four combat brigades plus thousands more support troops. All the president's military advisors have recommended sending more troops, but they also have warned that alone will not win the war unless Afghan President Karzai cleans up his government. The first combat troops would not arrive until early next year, and it would be the end of 2010 before they were all there. That makes this Afghanistan surge very different from the Iraq surge, in which 30,000 troops descended on Baghdad and the surrounding area in just 5 months. The buildup would be expected to last about 4 years. Added to the 68,000 Americans already there, that means there would be 100,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan by the end of the president's first term. Now, White House spokesman Robert Gibbs insists the president has not made a final decision on troop numbers. The president leaves for China later this week, and he is not expected to announce his decision until after he returns. Russ?
David Martin at the Pentagon. Thank you very much.
You know that it's not, is he going to send more troops? It's how many more troops is he going to send? He ran on a platform, ostensibly, of ending the wars. But a lot of it was just sort of a blank canvas for us to project our own personal desires for what we wanted our new progressive Democrat to be. More than happy to take on the hatred of the previous 8 years, and rightfully so, of criminal Bush. And he took all that, again, as a blank canvas. You projected what you wanted him to do, and he was more than happy to embody all that for you. But as we've said many, many times, it was slick Madison Avenue propaganda. I've been loving Mad Men, that AMC series. None of this stuff's by accident. Go read your Edward Bernays, the nephew of Freud. He wrote the book, Propaganda, the father of public relations. So, you know what I'm saying. And we'll hit other references here coming up in all the Obamasiah and War Whores updates. We're just trying to make you have your, oh, shit, moment about what's really going down. They get us to pay attention to the big show every 4 years. It's the Super Bowl. It's the World Series. It's the election. It's whatever you want to bandwagon on and get behind the winner. And then as soon as the big dog and pony show is over, you go back to not caring or paying any attention. So let's hit all the updates below this initial story. Sources say Obama to add 34,000 to Afghan surge. A lengthy piece from Alternet. Pentagon pouring your money into Afghanistan. Are they preparing for a very long war? Well, we know that question has to be rhetorical because it's obvious they are. And this article goes into some of the budget breakdowns. Long term, the CBS News bit said. On a different note from Global Research, rising military expenditure, the coming U.S. budget attack. Again, as folks like Ron Paul said over the last few years, it doesn't matter whether or not you want to keep this going and add more troops to the right war. Obama says Afghanistan's the right war. There is no right war. We can't afford to keep this going anyway. And we'll get to all the other tie-ins. The econo crash. The carbon tax. All of that. But let's just talk about the war horse right now. From Danger Room, Afghanistan's oil binge, 22 gallons of fuel per soldier per day. So again, if you want to save the environment, who's one of the biggest offenders? The war machine. Now, from the man who literally wrote the book on Blackwater, of course, they've now changed their name. Now, they're now Z, remember, XE. It means nothing. It stands for nothing. It's just a smokescreen. And again, asking a question that unfortunately we know the answer to, at least on some level. Jeremy Scahill asks, why is Obama still funding Blackwater?
The New York Times is up tonight with a bombshell of an investigative report that reveals plans by the firm Blackwater to bribe its way out of trouble after its employees shot and killed 17 civilians in Baghdad in 2007. In the wake of that shooting and the outrage it provoked against Blackwater, the New York Times tonight cites four of the company's former executives as saying that the company approved secret bribes of about $1 million to be paid to Iraqi officials to silence their criticism of the company and to allow Blackwater to stay in Iraq. Which is why I wanted to talk to you, because isn't Blackwater still in Iraq?
Yeah, Blackwater has a $200 million contract in Iraq for aviation services, but the State Department confirmed to me that Blackwater is still armed in Iraq indefinitely. And I should also say, Rachel, Triple Canopy hired former Blackwater guys after that contract was transferred over to Triple Canopy. You know who's guarding Hillary Clinton in Afghanistan right now? Blackwater. You know who guards members of Congress? Blackwater. They have half a billion dollars in contracts in Afghanistan right now. CIA, State Department, Defense Department. Why is President Obama keeping these guys on the payroll? There has never been a company in recent history that made the case that corporations are corrupt, evil organizations than Blackwater.
The line in Washington has long been that you can't get rid of this company, you can't get rid of these firms, because we're not capable as a government or as a military of doing what they do without them. What do you think?
You talk to people in the military and they'll say that that's nonsense. Another way of looking at this is Blackwater knows where a lot of bodies are buried. These guys who worked on the CIA's assassination program, the drone bombing campaign, and regarding all of the senior officials, they know a heck of a lot about what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. And those are not guys that you want on the other side of the fence if you're running things in Washington.
And if you need more proof of, like he was saying, evil, corrupt corporations, something we've noted time and time again, but here it is again from Salem News, I believe, from right out here in Oregon, salem-news.com. Blackwater used child prostitutes in Iraq. That's something we have seen time and time again from the military contractors that we have used and that we continue to use even when these accusations come out and are proven. DynCorp, Halliburton, sex slavery story won't go away. Google that. Of course, we always mention Cynthia McKinney, Grill and Rumsfeld, about DynCorp kidnapping sex slaves. A follow-up to all this on Scahill and Blackwater from RawStory.com, where he notes that Obama might be afraid of Blackwater. If your brain can just kind of ponder the ramifications of all that as it would play out in this shattered union, I shudder to think. But further down the updates, NATO airstrike mistakenly kills 7 Afghan soldiers and policemen. That's from the Los Angeles Times. And we've got another clip. Yeah, actually, this episode is jam-packed full of clips, so we're going to have to move quickly. I can't keep expounding and yada-yada-ing because there's so much to go over. CIA asset of Taliban, they get some U.S. ammo to help kill U.S. soldiers.
High in the mountains of eastern Afghanistan, Taliban fighters display what appear to be American arms and ammunition, apparently seized at a former U.S. combat outpost. The McChrystal plan means there is no longer a full-time coalition military presence in Camp Dash District, which now lies squarely under Taliban control. ISAF says it's looking into quite how and why military equipment was left behind, with some of it now fallen into enemy hands.
That's the enemy, of course, we found out recently, you know, with CIA funding Karzai's brother, running drugs. He got arrested, he was out. You remember we covered that story several months ago. These guys have been gaming third world countries and others for a very long time. And all these guys that we still have in charge, ostensibly in charge, like Gates, defense secretary that Obama left on. Again, even if he was trying to give the cosmetic illusion of changing and ending the wars of aggression abroad, don't you think he would have changed the head of the military just to give you that little new? But he didn't. So much of this just kind of rubbed in our face. And Gates, he's been in Afghanistan for a long time. Go check out his bio. They know how to stir up insurgencies. It's what they do. It's proxy wars. Let's you and him fight. And it's all a part of the grand chessboard. Brzezinski, top advisor to Obama. It all sounds so rote now. But hopefully, I'm not always just talking to the same folks. Hopefully, this information gets spread, and hopefully it will have some kind of effect. And again, on the websites, I lay it all out. Don't take my word for it. I give you the info. I give you the tools. I give you the routes to go down and do the research for yourself. So again, I digress. What goes along with that clip of Taliban using U.S. weapons, apparently seized? In Kabul's Obama Market, U.S. military rations also for sale. That's from McClatchy. An interesting note from Press TV out of Iran, more U.S. vets die at home than in Afghanistan. Why is that? Oh, because we don't take care of them at all. Health scare. Soldier faces 10 years in jail for desertion after highlighting, quote, great wrongs being perpetrated in Afghanistan, end quote, from the Daily Mail. Two different articles about the aforementioned Robert Gates telling the war strategy leakers. STFU, says Danger Room and DOD Buzz. Shut up, Gates says again. Leaking all our amazing new game plans for Afghanistan. So, that CBS report that we started all this off on is all predicated on unnamed sources who won't come out and exactly say it. You're letting all our great plans out of the bag. It is confirmed by way of Washington's blog, that war spending makes fewer jobs than other spending. Video clip interview with Seymour Hersh saying that Obama's finally taking control of the Afghanistan decision. That's on raw replay from the Washington Post. Obama to receive proposals for Afghan campaign. And the last bit clip, we won't play it, but it's Gordon New World Order Brown, Prime Minister of the UK, where he notes that we should see Obama's decision on the Afghan surge, quote-unquote, in days. Again, all coming amid White House denials, and we haven't made our minds up, and blah. We move to our next post on MediaMonarchy.com. All the rest of the Obama-Saya updates, bitter dilemmas and corrupt agendas. First we'll hit from the Deutsche Press Agency, bitterness of war hits home and adds to Obama's dilemma. Where we're first going to note something we're going to get into, of course, more deeply in just a little bit, but again, from the DPA. The shooting rampage at Fort Hood, Texas, illuminated the growing toll two wars have taken on the U.S. military as President Barack Obama nears a key decision in his young presidency about what to do in Afghanistan. They tie the Fort Hood shooter in, along with all the stories of the alarmingly high suicide rates. And, of course, no one in the States wants the war. Fortunately, it doesn't seem like most of the folks have been convinced that it is the right war. And I'm not sure if it was a clip that we played recently or something I just listened to, but basically, you know, someone saying that they're always going to have, the, you know, that 25-35% of people you're going to go along with every single thing that either of these corrupt puppets do. Red state, blue state, liberal, conservative. So much of what's going on right now, again, is happening under left cover. After 8 years of getting beat down by the neocon gang, of course you're going to go for Obama. From the LA Times, less than half of the U.S. says Obama's election has improved race relations. And these all seem to kind of go together. The dialectic. They play us off against each other. Divide and conquer. Black and white. Left and right. Red and blue. But again, from the Los Angeles Times, Democratic consultant says the White House warned him after his appearance on Fox News. At least one Democratic political strategist has gotten a blunt warning from the White House to never appear on Fox News Channel, an outlet that presidential aides have depicted as not so much a news-gathering operation as a political opponent bent on damaging the Obama administration. The Democratic strategist said that shortly after an appearance on Fox, he got a phone call from a White House official telling him not to be a guest on the show again. The call had an intimidating tone, he said. The message was, "We better not see you on again," said the strategist, who spoke on condition of anonymity so as not to run afoul of the White House. An implicit suggestion, he said, was that clients might stop using you if you continue. White House Communications Director Anita Dunn said that she had checked with colleagues who deal with TV issues and that they hadn't told people to avoid Fox. On the contrary, they had urged people to go on the network. So it's denials and anonymouses all around, but again, it's the fake left-right back and forth. One party's in, one party's out. One network's good, the other one's bad. They're gaming you again and again and again. Another question, this time from the Washington Post. Why aren't Obama's job creation efforts more direct? I believe we noted last week that with those touted 650 or so thousand jobs that Obama said he recreated or saved, there was some inordinate dollar amount per those jobs. An interesting note, and this was just one of those kind of, I guess, viral, you know, not a chain letter, but something of indeterminate origin that starts to make its way around. You can grab it on Infowars.com/broke. And I think it's quite interesting, and I think we should check it out. To President Obama and all 535 voting members of the legislature, it's now official. You're all corrupt. The U.S. Postal Service, established in 1775. You've had 234 years to get it right, and it's broke. Social Security was established in 1935. They had 74 years to get it right, and it's broke. Fannie Mae, established in 1938, 71 years to get it right, and it's broke. War on Poverty started in 64, 45 years to get that right. $1 trillion of our money confiscated each year and transferred to the quote-unquote poor. Medicare, Medicaid were established in 65, 44 years to get it right, and they're broke. Freddie Mac, established in 1970, 39 years to get it right, and it's broken. Department of Energy created in 77 to lessen our dependence on foreign oil. It's, of course, now ballooned to 16,000 employees with a budget of $24 billion a year, and we import more oil than ever before. You had 32 years to get that right, and it's an abysmal failure. You failed in every government service. You've shoved down our throats while overspending our tax dollars, and you want Americans to believe you can be trusted with a government-run healthcare system. Broke. It's, of course, been a busy week for the Obama-sia, with terror events and Veterans Day and Eastern vacations. It's interesting to note another corrupt critter in the cabinet. Not exactly in the cabinet. But again, all the cronies that come in, which with whichever party is in favor. TSA nominee was censured over records check. But let's break this down. This is from Federal Eye. President Obama's nominee to lead the nation's airport security officers received a censure from the FBI in 1988 after asking a San Diego police officer to run background checks on his ex-wife's boyfriend. This guy's name's Errol Southers. to serve as the head of the TSA. The TSA would be that group that, of course, we've noted recently running checkpoint drills at Greyhound bus stations in Florida, using DNA-damaging terahertz waves to scan and display your naked body in airports all around the country. Making grandma dump out her bottle of water. Take off your shoes. All this garbage predicated on trumped up terror events with bus that later you find out they have to acquit most of the people or let them go or drop the case. FBI informants, agent provocateurs, false flag, fake attacks. I remember there was this guy who used to do really good investigative work against that other party when they were in favor, a guy named Keith Olbermann. But now, of course, his party's in favor and he's blind to the comparisons. It's all left cover. You can check out the video and the transcripts and all the stuff of Obama speaking to Veterans Day crowds from the Los Angeles Times, saying that is why we fight. And of course, this swirl of all of this stuff. The Fort Hood false flag, the DC sniper being executed, Veterans Day, all these things kind of swirl around. McClatchy has a report on White House allies saying that Obama bungled the Guantanamo closing. And an interesting note from CampaignForLiberty.com, a bit by Jack Hunter. Liberals refuse to admit Obama's policies look a lot like Bush's. And that's the last of the Obama Saya updates, bitter dilemmas and corrupt agendas. We're going to get into what we refer to as geopolitics. One world, warnings, and true intentions. Again, things are moving at such a rapid clip. I know when I think about a lot of the older posts on the site going back a couple of years, because again, the site's been going on now over 4 years. The radio show's been going on over 3 years. So we have quite the catalog of media and information available for you on MediaMonarchy.com. I used to generally just post up some articles. But now it's gotten to the point with a lot of things that I just have to blast up the headlines because there's no way I can flesh all of them out and there's no way I can post them all up to my homepage. So again, I put them there for you. I save the pages, PDFs, as you should always do, especially on contentious articles that may go down the memory hole. Save all the video, all the audio. Take it offline. Back it up. But I'm digressing again. Geopolitics. One world, warnings, and true intentions. We start with a bit from the Washington Post. And as we've seen the revelation of the method, as the facade is cracking and things are becoming fairly obvious as to what's going on. Things like black helicopters and New World Order and one world government and one world currency and all those things, those were all kook detectors. You were a nut if you talked about that stuff. And it didn't exist. But now it exists, and not only is it a good thing, but you're even more silly if you think it's bad, and we'll just write articles using the terminology that you always said that you would use. And now you're using it just in our faces. Dana Milbank writes on the Washington Post, "One world government? The globe may not be big enough." The New World Order came into being 4:25 Tuesday afternoon. That would be November 10th. it arrived at the Capitol. Until that moment, the seat of American government, in the form of the stooped and bespectacled figure of Ban Ki-moon, who, as UN Secretary General, is the de facto leader of what conspiracy theorists call the One World Government. One floor beneath the Senate chamber, Ban, a South Korean national, took his place behind a lectern bearing the Senate seal and spelled out his demands. I would certainly expect the Senate to take the necessary action. That's what I've encouraged the senators, Moon told reporters as a trio of lawmakers stood at his side. He added an admonition for the chamber to deliver as soon as possible. The One World Government has specific requirements, Ban added, namely a legally binding commitment to 25-40% greenhouse gas reduction as recommended by the IPCC. Uh-oh. A UN official standing in the Capitol telling U.S. lawmakers what binding commitments intergovernmental authorities expect from them? Glenn Beck was going to burst a blood vessel. As if Fox talking head Glenn Beck actually represents what I think we're trying to do here and what we're really trying to do in the real info war. Again, they're just, that's the fake other side. And they're using and appropriating a lot of things that have come from 9/11 truth, Federal Reserve truth, vaccine truth movements. And they're using that and they're twisting it and they're misdirecting it. And that's what they do. Use some discernment. So the Washington Post, as some have noted, the CIA's favorite newspaper, says this town ain't big enough for one world government. Truthnews.us goes into German Chancellor Angela Merkel calling for a new global order. See, there's no new world order. It's a new global order. Or global governance. Semantics. UK judges no longer have to declare Freemasonry. This is from The Telegraph. Judges will no longer have to declare being a Freemason after Jack Straw scrapped an 11-year rule he introduced amid fears he would lose a human rights battle. Since 1998, those becoming judges or magistrates have been required to say if they are a Mason, after the then Home Secretary, Mr. Straw, said membership of secret societies such as Freemasonry could raise suspicions of impartiality and objectivity. But now, Justice Secretary, Mr. Straw, has abandoned the requirement after the United Grand Lodge of England threatened legal action following a ruling by the European Court of Human Rights. In 2007, the court ruled in favor of Italian Masons that making an official declare their membership breached their right to free association and was discriminatory. Freemasons have rights too. Spencer Ackerman over at WashingtonIndependent.com, I believe one of the guys noted, and even maybe called out specifically by Robert Gates, telling those war strategy leakers to shut the F up. STFU. No one wants to talk about CIA briefings on Karzai's brother. Again, from WashingtonIndependent.com. But on around the world, Israel warns they're ready to roll against Iran. Let's roll, if you will. That's from IsraelNationalNews.com. As well from there, U.S. senators act to force recognition of Jerusalem as capital. An interesting note, a listener sent me this article from the Big Brother Corporation, BBC. Why Ugandans want to work in Iraq. At the watertight security training ground in Uganda, a group of men and women are doing target practice with their AK-47s. Nearby, another group are listening to a lecture under the shelter of a tree. Watertight Security Services has been sending Ugandan security guards to Iraq since 2007. So far, more than 10,000 Ugandans have gone to work in the country. Watertight services. Why Ugandans want to work in Iraq? And that is essentially because War is good business. Business is good. White powder sent to foreign missions in New York, harmless. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. Spacewar.com has Yemen rebels saying that Saudi jets are using phosphorus bombs. Well, of course, if U.S. and Israel can use phosphorus bombs, of course our good buddies the Saudis can do it too. Massive blackout leaves Brazil on edge. We noted on the previous B-side episode of 148 that some of the power outages Brazil had in 2005 and 2007 weren't actually the result of hackers, just crappy insulators and equipment. But 2 days ago, on the 11th of November, Brazil vows to find cause of huge blackout. Brazil's government vowed Wednesday to find what caused a massive and mysterious blackout that plunged half the country into the dark and raised questions over its preparedness to host the 2016 Olympics. ChavezCode.com points out something interesting. Official U.S. Air Force document reveals true intentions behind the U.S. and Colombia military agreement. New agreement between the U.S. and Colombia. Again, an official document from the Department of the U.S. Air Force reveals that the military base in Palenquero, Colombia, will provide the Pentagon with, quote, an opportunity for conducting full-spectrum operations throughout South America, end quote. Go back to our neighbors to the south. In the coming North American Union from Bloomberg, Mexico group wants United Nations peacekeepers in Juarez. We've noted many, many times before, but it's been a while, with the chaos and drug wars raging in Mexico, that it always kind of spoke to the sham of the global war of terror, selectively enforced like much of the dictates of the police state. The blue helmets, coming soon to a shattered union near you. Our last bit here on geopolitics, one world, warnings, and true intentions is funny and disturbing on a number of levels. From webofentertainment.com, a $1 trillion ad campaign. Billboards and wallpaper for the Zimbabwean newspaper, Zimbabwean, made entirely of worthless Zimbabwean banknotes. What more proof do you need of a country's total economic collapse than being able to paste trillions and trillions and trillions of dollar notes onto a billboard, and it's still cheaper than if you had used paper? The photos, and there are many, are beautiful and amazing. Thanks to Mugabe, this money is wallpaper, one of the massive ones says. Fight the regime that has crippled a country. Wow. Okay, and it looks like there are even tons more photos than when I was first linking this up yesterday. Webofentertainment.com has this amazing post, a $1 trillion ad campaign for the Zimbabwean newspaper. That's the last on geopolitics, and it's appropriate we're talking about money. Because as has been said naively in other cultures and countries throughout history, that can't happen here. Well, how about CNBC talking about a new global currency and a new world order? This by way of the aforementioned CNBC and blacklistednews.com and YouTube, the dollar will be utterly destroyed and become virtually worthless, all by Damon Vickers, Chief Investment Officer, Nine Points Capital Partners, due to the huge wage disparities between the U.S. and emerging markets like China, Damon Vickers said that may resolve itself in some type of global currency crisis.
We're back with Damon Vickers, Chief Investment Officer, Nine Points Capital Partners, staying with us live out of Seattle, Washington. Damon, you guys are a hedge fund, and what you guys basically do is you try and catch breaks either to the up or downside. Apparently, with oil, also with gold, you've done the timing pretty right, John, and just as it started, oil up past 75, gold past 1,000. Are you going to sit on those positions then?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this is, I mean, you can think a lot about it, and you can, you know, one day and, you know, have all these vacillations psychologically, but, you know, this is the time to, you know, to play ping pong, to, you know, pick up, you know, get involved in model making or something ridiculous. I mean, this is the time where you make money, where the trend develops. And so there's really not a lot to do with it. I mean, oil looks higher, gold looks higher, currencies look weaker, all for the reasons that we talked about before. I mean, you've got huge wage disparities. I don't know how that inevitably resolves itself. It may resolve itself in some type of a global currency crisis. And then if global currency crisis unfolds, then inevitably you get, an alignment under a global world government, a new global currency, and a new world order. So we may be moving towards that.
Talk to us a little bit more about this currency crisis you see erupting. What does that assume about what's going to happen to the dollar?
Well, it assumes that the dollar will utterly get destroyed and become virtually worthless. You know, we have a combined... Well, I mean, here's what we know. We know that if you can produce something, that this game that we have going on in the United States and on a planetary basis cannot perpetuate itself forever. We've got a $65 trillion negative net worth. We cannot possibly meet with our health care costs and our indulgent society, which we have in the United States. We can't put that against the unit labor cost of a China can produce something at a dollar an hour versus $24 an hour with health benefits and, you know, all that that's built into there. So how does that inevitably resolve itself? Well, we're seeing it resolve itself.
So you're saying the U.S. needs a softer, weaker, more competitive dollar, partly because of this whole wage disparity, but then again, overnight we had the productivity numbers out, 9.5%. I mean, that makes up for a lot of those. At that kind of rate, it's probably not sustainable.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. It's a great number, and we love to see people productive. I mean, let's get going. I love it. But how do you create a global marketplace so that everybody benefits, so that the standard of livings are not so great, so that you don't have this mad rush to deplete the world's resources, which is kind of what we have now? What are the initiatives that have to be carried through? And the Western economies, the United States, Europe, Canada, we don't have resources. Neither does a lot of Asia, to be quite frank. So I don't know what they're going to do with all those reserve dollars. But we see that the currencies have resources. The Brazils, the Canadas, Australia, that their currencies are doing well. Their stock markets have done the best year to date because they have stuff. They've got resources. Mm. They export real things, and the United States exports promises and pretty paper.
All right. Listen, Damon, we got to go. You have yourself a great weekend. Damon Vickers, Chief Investment Officer, Nine Points Capital Partners, live out of Seattle.
You have a great weekend. See, man, they're having the time of their lives. That clip is so fascinating. He's so just sort of matter-of-factly lays it out. It's like, of course I'm going to stay in gold and oil and tangible things. Any notes that we don't make anything? And who helped all that happen? We noted recently, of course, Senator's son, fortunate son, Al Gore, helped hammer through NAFTA and GATT back in the 90s. We don't make anything. We export promises and pretty paper, as he said. But the same folks who are going to offer us this great solution to things are the same finance oligarchs who owe no allegiance and acknowledge no responsibility to the people or the countries they supposedly represent. And I wonder if guys like this, Damon Vickers, I mean, he'll probably be all right for the most part. And I think a lot of folks go along with things because you think you're down with them. And I guess we're going to see. So now let's get to all the Econo Crash updates. So appropriately enough, as I say, you know, these guys are having the time of their life. We hit an article several months ago from an interview with George Soros, where he said he's having the time of his life. Everything's really coming together for him. Everything is coming together for the oligarchs. Because they now have moved on to what may very well be their endgame scam. And that's the war on you, the war on living, the war on CO2 and people. George Soros calls for a world currency and new world architecture. In a shocking op-ed piece published Thursday on project-syndicate.org, globalist financier George Soros calls for a new world architecture. In his essay, he states how international capitalism, led by the United States, has broken down, and how a new multilateral system based on sounder principles must be invented through the use of the IMF. Soros goes on to recommend SDRs, special drawing rights created by the International Monetary Fund, as a replacement for the declining U.S. dollar. The dollar no longer enjoys the trust and confidence that it once did. The U.S. ought not to shy away from wider use of IMF special drawing rights. Because SDRs are denominated in several national currencies, no single currency would enjoy an unfair advantage. Soros also calls for the UN and its Security Council, currently led by President Barack Obama, a direct violation of the, the U.S. Constitution, to serve as the overseeing enforcement body for this new financial system. In that clip from CNBC, that wasn't the only bit, putting it quite bluntly, on CNBC. Another clip that's linked up for you on ZeroHedge.com, the U.S. government will be totally bankrupt in a year and a half. That's if it isn't already. But again, we're seeing the facade crack. And pretty soon, all the plates that are spinning are going to start to fall and crack. True U.S. unemployment rate stands at 17.5%. That's from Raw Story. The Times Online goes into more bizarre religious, quasi-spiritual posturing from the banksters. I'm doing God's work. Meet Mr. Goldman Sachs. Four more banks failed last Friday. Georgia, Michigan, Minnesota, and Missouri. Gold rises as dollar hovers near 15-month lows. Last I checked, gold was at $1,100. Most say it'll never go below $1,000 again. And at the worst time for all these corrupt bastards, by way of Politico.com, a new report points out that 237 members of Congress are millionaires. An interesting piece from Washington's blog, Don't Blame Capitalism for Wall Street's Corruption and Lawlessness. I know something we noted in my epic interview with Richard Grove of TragedyandHope.com. Also, of course, available in the amazing video, Broken Trust, Wall Street's Dead End. A lot of this came thanks to, among others, Skull and Bones Boys. Again, finance oligarchs owing no allegiance to any people or nation or anything. Corporate personhood. Also explored in the documentary The Corporation. But let's get another take on the Econo Crash where Ron Paul notes that this health scare bill could help kill the dollar.
Ron Paul with your weekly update for November 9th. As Washington continues debating health care reform, the rest of the country is primarily concerned about jobs and the economy. It is still uncertain what policies will be implemented, but I am certain about one thing. It will only further devastate our economy and our dollar. The leadership has come up with a proposal they are confident will be what they consider fiscally responsible, only to have it scored as nearly twice as expensive by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. Estimates of past health care spending programs have been off by as much as 100%, so there is no telling what the actual cost will be. The past century should have taught us one thing, that government intervention is expensive. Government programs lend themselves so easily to waste, fraud, and abuse. Combine that with overall inefficiency and it all adds up to a hefty price tag for the taxpayer, with not much left over for actual services. An outright takeover of an entire sector of the economy, especially one as important as health care, is something that we just cannot afford for the government to do right now. Not to mention the fact that it is completely unconstitutional. But Washington insists on torturing the numbers and tinkering around the edges rather than facing the truth. If health care reform does indeed pass, we should not be under the illusion that it will be free.
Of course not. We have the last few bit of Econo crash updates, but first, my friends, I should tell you that we're now into hour number two of episode 149 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's Friday the 13th, November 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as CyberspaceWar.com and FoodWorldOrder.com. And again, thanks to all our affiliates, ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, CascadiaPublicRadio.org, and more.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Also want to mention, we launched last week, thanks to my man Jeff, at radio23.org, radio23.org. We launched a new high-quality feed for the episodes. So if you are a pirate radio station, internet radio station, you want to rebroadcast MediaMonarchy.com, there's a new 192 kilobits MP3 available for you. It's at feeds.feedburner.com/MediaMonarchyHD. So again, there's tons of ways you can get and download and share all the media coming from MediaMonarchy.com, your source for all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. So like I said, let's get the last little bit of EconoCrash updates on this posting, originally ostensibly about Damon Vickers on CNBC, a new global currency and new world order. We note that Adobe has laid off 680 workers, that's 1 in 10. Profits up at Walmart and Kohl's. Goody, goody. We, of course, noted recently that Walmart is now selling coffins on their website. Again, to Washington's blog, where, again, we have confirmation now coming from Barrick, one of the world's, or now the world's, biggest gold producers, that we have hit peak gold. In other words, the relatively easy to find gold supplies are gone, and so supplies are getting more and more expensive to locate and extract. Mark Faber on Bloomberg notes that gold price won't drop below $1,000 an ounce again. A as I just mentioned that. In a fascinating note, again, sent to me by a listener, and I'm, again, loving the amazing amount of people that I'm picking up on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, and also thanks to CorbettReport.com and our new weekly video series, The New World Next Week. So it's almost gotten to the point that I can't remember and can't reply to all the comments and notes and news leads from people. So again, I appreciate it. I thank you. Keep them coming. MarketOracle.co.uk has an interesting note, and I can't read all through this, but essentially it breaks down to fake gold. Like Goldfinger? A new take on Operation Grand Slam, this time with a tungsten twist. Where again, we note on MarketOracle.co.uk, I've already reported on irregular physical gold settlements which occurred in London, England back in the first week of October 2009. Specifically, these settlements involved the intermediation of at least one central bank, the Bank of England, to resolve allocated settlements on behalf of J.P. Morgan and Deutsche Bank, who did not have the gold bullion that they had sold short and were contracted to deliver. At the same time, Market Oracle reported on two other unusual occurrences: irregularities in the publication of the gold ETF GLD's bar list. Again, technical gold indexes. And the other thing, reports of 400-ounce good delivery bricks of gold found gutted and filled with tungsten within the confines of LBMA-approved vaults in Hong Kong. If anyone were contemplating creating fake gold bars, tungsten, at roughly $10 a pound, would be the metal of choice since it has the exact same density as gold, making a fake bar salted with tungsten indistinguishable from a solid gold bar by simply just weighing it. This goes into reports out of China, where basically, roughly 15 years ago, during the Clinton administration, think Robert Rubin, Alan Greenspan, Larry Summers, you know, a lot of those guys who are now back with the new progressive Democrat. Roughly 15 years ago, during the Clinton administration, between 1.3 and 1.5 million 400-ounce tungsten blanks were allegedly manufactured by a very high-end, sophisticated refiner in the USA. Subsequently, 640,000 of these tungsten blanks received their gold plating and were shipped to Fort Knox and remain there to this day. Lastly, Market Oracle notes that they know folks who have copies of the original shipping documents with dates and exact weights of tungsten bars shipped to Fort Knox. I can't confirm any of that, but it's fascinating nonetheless, and makes the econo crash that much more frightening. This Global Currency New World Order post on MediaMonarchy.com does have a comment from the Reverend Reggie Jackson, where he says, yes, we are headed to a new world economic order, new currency, and then they will change it to the Mark of the Beast chip that is spoken of in Revelation 13 and 14. And you don't have to believe in the Bible to know for a fact that companies like Verichip and IBM are working on implantable microchips. More on that as we progress through this episode 149. So now that we've referenced that, we're going to move to all the latest updates on the BioWars and the swine flu and the disease industry. Resistant strains or strained resistance, where we note at the top, and we wonder if the forced vaccinations have begun. Cops hold down West Virginia boy who fled the swine flu shot. This comes from theintelligencer.net. in conjunction with the Wheeling News Register. It took the strength of two sheriff's deputies to keep a middle schooler still enough to receive a shot of the swine flu vaccine at a recent clinic. During a regular Wheeling and Ohio County Health Board meeting Tuesday, Health Department Administrator Howard Gamble told board members about the student's attempt to flee Wheeling Middle School during a vaccination clinic held there last Friday. He noted the boy's mother couldn't bear to watch the scene and left the gymnasium. Out of apparent fear of receiving the injection, the student ran out of the building. The school's resource officer, Ohio County Sheriff's Deputy John Haglock, coaxed the boy back inside. Once at the shot station, however, Haglock apparently needed some help keeping the boy still, and another deputy assisted. He tried to run. I looked over and saw two sheriff's deputies holding a kid down. Mom took off. She couldn't take it. You had one nurse with a needle, two deputies holding him, one nurse is grabbing hands, because that's what they want to do, to go after the needle, and that's the last thing you want. Gamble said as soon as the nurse gave the boy his injection and told him he was done, he hopped up like nothing had happened. I can't quite break down whether this happened in West Virginia or in Ohio. I know this is in, it's in Wheeling, so it's quite, it's right on the border. But regardless, we have, not out of left field, speculated about the coming specter, or the specter of the coming forced vaccinations. Right along with this, teen diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome after swine flu shot. This from Paul Joseph Watson. A high school athlete from Virginia was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome hours after receiving swine flu shot, but health authorities are attempting to dismiss the connection as a coincidence, precisely as they resolved to do long before the H1N1 vaccination program even started. 14-year-old Jordan McFarland developed severe headaches, muscle spasms, and weakness in his legs following the swine flu shot. He was diagnosed by doctors at Inova Fairfax Hospital as having Guillain-Barré syndrome. Kind of butchering that. Guillain-Barré. GB syndrome is the nerve disorder that was prevalent in recipients of the vaccine during the last mass swine flu vaccination program in 1976. Conan and Jordan's father, Calvin McFarland, both 38, believe the shot sparked the illness that came on 18 hours after the boy's vaccination. More from MSNBC, Fox News, Prison Planet, Reuters, BlissTree.com, and on and on. But now we hop back into West Virginia by way of WVGazette.com, the Charleston Gazette, the capital of West Virginia. Mingo County mother is denied vaccine exemption for her daughter. Chief U.S. District Judge Joseph R. Goodwin ruled against a Mingo County mother who did not want her child to be immunized from disease. In April, Jennifer Workman, the mother of a six-year-old girl, sued in U.S. District Court in Charleston, West Virginia, so her daughter could attend Lenore Pre-K to 8 school in Mingo County. The girl had not been immunized, and Workman claimed a medical exemption. West Virginia and Mississippi are two states that allow only a medical exemption to immunization. Unlike most states, West Virginia does not allow religious or philosophical exemptions. I did contact someone fairly well connected in the West Virginia government. There's no move to overturn this, and they're not in session right now anyway, so any move on getting a religious or conscientious objection to forced vaccinations in West Virginia, like the 48 other states in the country, is going to have to wait a couple months. Few blacks showing up for free vaccines in Los Angeles County. That is from the LA Times. And by way of WBBH, NBC2, out of Florida, and I swiped their video and posted it up to youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. Dozens of Florida students given the wrong flu shot.
New at 6, they thought they were getting protection from the swine flu, but tonight dozens of Collier County children learned they were given the wrong vaccine. Tonight our Adam Freeman is getting answers about how this mix-up happened.
Though the sign outside the community school of Naples says you can get your swine flu shot here, 77 students received something else on Monday.
How did they mess that up?
Fifth grader Xanos Grecos is one of the students injected with the seasonal flu vaccine instead.
The nurses should have known.
The boxes of H1N1 and seasonal flu vaccine don't look much different. The Collier County Health Department says a nurse packed the wrong one for the school clinic. On top of that, none of the nurses giving the vaccines even realized something else was in their hands.
How could this happen?
Yeah, you know, it's concerning to us because these are seasoned nurses.
This is the consent form parents filled out. It makes at least 10 specific references to the H1N1 vaccine, but makes no mention of any seasonal flu shots.
No excuse. It was a mistake.
A total of 6 nurses and 2 supervisors received written reprimands for the error. Fortunately, the health department says the shots pose no risks to students.
We've already, starting last night, put into effect training measures that it should never happen again.
But it means students like Xanos will have to try again on Friday.
I'm okay with getting another shot.
Hoping this one turns out better than the first. In Collier County, I'm Freeman, NBC2.
And the swine flu vaccination clinic is taking place right now at Estero High School. It's open until 9, and we're just getting word Charlotte County's first clinic will be held 1 week from tomorrow. The nasal spray vaccine will only be available here from 10 to 4 at the Charlotte Event Center in Punta Gorda, and only for those considered high priority.
Still acting like there's an amazing scarcity of the drug, which fortunately we're seeing that most people don't believe the hype. And so, going along with the other LA Times story about few blacks showing up for free vaccines, those silly blacks, they should get their shot. They should be more trustful of a government who relatively only recently said they were people. And of course, we didn't run bioweapons tests on you guys. There were no AIDS tests. There were no syphilis tests. Stop being so suspicious. So we know that, fortunately, a lot of folks aren't believing the hype. More than 38 million vaccine doses available against the swine flu. That's from the LA Times. Polish Prime Minister says no to the swine flu vaccine unless it's been properly tested. That's from metronews.ca. Many Italian physicians reject swine flu vaccine. That's from Press TV. Majority of Californians intend to ignore the late vaccine. From the LA Times. Ukraine first, Austria second for martial law. That is from theflucase.com, where we noted extensively last week the strange situation in the Ukraine and the mysterious virus that they have going on. Again, last week's episode, we broke it down quite interestingly, tied in, of course, with Baxter and Joseph Moshe. Speculative, yes. Interesting and well worth the research, absolutely. So we note, again, by way of Russia Today, returning to the Ukraine, where they note that more than half of Ukraine to catch the swine flu.
Officials in Ukraine say the death toll from a suspected swine flu outbreak has reached 144. Almost a million people are thought to be infected, mostly in the west of the country. And as Alexei Yashevsky reports, the presidential elections due to take place in January are under threat from the outbreak.
It's a desperate search for this pensioner. She's been trying to find anti-flu medicine in almost a dozen pharmacies across Kiev, and she's been hearing the same answer. Have you managed to buy medication?
No, they didn't have any.
Did they promise when they will?
No, said they were expecting it.
I tried to buy some anti-flu drugs as well. Also, without luck.
I stood in a queue for almost half an hour, and all I could get was aspirin, hardly a good medicine against flu. Doctors told me that they're expecting a shipment of more drugs to arrive soon, but when it happened, nobody knows just yet.
World Health Organization silence on Ukraine sequences raises pandemic concerns. That's from recombinomics.com. a million infected in Ukraine flu epidemic. That's from TerraDaily.com. There's more from Eclipse TV. I believe it's Dr. Deagle talking about the full story of strange Ukraine mutations, connecting in with pharmaceutical company Baxter, which have been proved to have shipped out quote-unquote tainted vaccines that have killed animals and others. A guy named Joseph Moshe, dual Israeli citizen, supposedly called into an LA radio station and said that Baxter's laboratory in the Ukraine was working on some crazy shit. This was back in August. This guy got SWAT teamed and dragged away. He basically said, hey, some biowar stuff's going on in a lab in the Ukraine. It's tied in with swine flu. And now we're seeing it. Afghanistan ill-prepared for swine flu, again from the Los Angeles Times, but returning to theflucase.com, and again, I've said it before, I'll say it again, always finding new sites every week, amazing, new, independent, open-source intelligence alternative news sites. Many hands make light work. Need for special needles delays vaccine campaign in Norway. We've noted the irregular large size of the needles being used for the swine flu vaccine. And again, have speculated the possibility that they could also contain some kind of nanochip. All these guys, all the pharmaceutical companies, they have contracts with Verichip. It's not a crazy question. But of course, we can't confirm that here. Serbia declares swine flu epidemic. That's from BalkanInsight.com. Military personnel banned from H1N1 vaccine sites. That's from the Huffington Post. And the long paper from Dr. Archie Kalakarinos on the swine flu fiasco. That's up on thetruthseeker.co.uk. Now we have all the other just EnviroHealth updates. And this is going to go around the world and in a multitude of directions. And we'll note at the top, with another note on it to come, that both the Orlando, Florida and Fort Hood, Texas shooters, both, of course, linked to psychiatric drugs. That's from naturalnews.com. DOJ warns drug companies on corruption. That's from Reuters. Dutch pull Pfizer vaccine batch after infants die. That's from MSNBC. Rare virus poses new threat to troops. That's from the Washington Times. Again, strange bioweapons taking form, taking shape. Eco-barons lead the way. That's from the Times Online. That's another one, and again, that shows you that the oligarchs are behind the new world religion of climate control. They caused the problem. They will now offer you the solution, and they'll make even more money off of it. Hillary accepts blame for global warming role and ponders the link between climate change and family planning. That's from CNS News, and again, eugenics is very much the end game. The depopulation mantra builds as the Copenhagen conference approaches. That's from InfoWars as well. Population reduction, globalist endgame begins? Terra Daily wonders if the Copenhagen climate treaty is in danger. They make no reference of Lord Monckton blowing the whistle on the Copenhagen treaty, which essentially would set up a climate control government. Again, we're nonpartisan. We end up playing clips from all different sides. And you got to get the interesting information where it comes from. So having said that, on Fox News, Chuck Norris says Copenhagen to forge one world order.
But actually, the conference starts on the day the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor.
Does it really?
December 7th. So,
now,
so that's some kind of indication right there.
Is the president going to go back? Last time he wanted to go back, it didn't turn out so well. But is he going to go?
I don't know if he is or not. I don't know if he's going to send his send the Hillary. Who knows what he's going to do?
Well, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is one of those who's been espousing sort of updating the Kyoto Accord, this global environmental sort of watch.
Truthfully, I think he will go.
Think he's going to make some big concessions?
Oh, definitely. I really think he's going over there to try to create a one world order. And I think.
Well, what's your big worry?
My big worry is the fact that we, as a nation, if we start having to be obligated to other countries, like in this conference, they're going to try to take our money and send it to third world countries because of since we spend so much oil and these other countries have suffered, then we're going to give our money to these third world countries. Neil, we have people here starving in our own country. My foundation, I have families who are making $9,000 a year with the kids that I'm teaching. Why aren't we trying to help the poverty in our own country?
But isn't this just about a cleaner
global?
You don't buy that.
I don't buy that. I don't buy. You know, Al Gore became a $100 million millionaire, you know, from this global bombardment, but I don't believe it for a second. I think it's a big con game that they're doing.
But nevertheless, you fear that the president is going to concede, give these countries what they want, be part of this globalist tradition, and then what happens?
Who knows what's going to happen? You know, God forbid this even this happens in our country. Our country, as we know it now, will no longer exist, Neil. That's the whole thing, right?
Well, the proponents in Copenhagen, they're in the beautiful people.
Very
attractive.
Yeah.
You spend too much time in Fallujah, you should really get out. But they say we'll have a cleaner world and everyone will be happy, including Chuck Norris.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that. First of all, I don't believe China's going to go for this. I believe India's going to go for this. And they're not going to start the country.
You know, China's the world's biggest polluter.
I know they are. And they're not going to change. So the thing is, for them to say, well, United States, you change, but we're not going to change. You know, so you clean up your country, but we're going to keep polluting our part of the world. You know, it's ludicrous.
The end of America happens in the middle of the night, referencing the late night passage of the health scare grab, again in the House. However, we return again to the man the Democrats should have nominated, a guy named Dennis Kucinich. No, a lot of lefties, they used to support him, until it came time to fall behind the guy that was going to win. And you forgot all those other things, and you forgot the things you really wanted. Folks like Dennis Kucinich aren't perfect, but they're damn hell whole lot better than most of the folks in the corrupt Congress. There's a video and an article from Digital Journal, but let's find out for a quick moment why Kucinich voted against the health care bill.
So, Congressman, you were a giant no on Saturday to the health care reform bill in the House of Representatives. Why?
Because it forces people to buy private insurance, makes them pay a penalty if they don't. People pay twice. They pay first from their own pocket, and they pay second through their taxes. That's the wrong business model. I mean, insurance companies are in business to make money. In healthcare, they make money not providing care. If we want health care, then let's have health care and put the money into health care, not take one out of every $3 and give it to the insurance companies.
So if you don't buy the health care in the House program, what is this penalty? How much?
Well, it depends. It's a percentage. But the point of the matter is that we should be not incentivizing or forcing people to buy the private insurance. But that's exactly what's been set up. And by the way, Greta, we tried to create some real competition with these insurance companies. First single payer was taken off the table. Then you had a robust public option that was whittled down to next to nothing. The state single payer protection amendment, which I had in the bill, was taken out. In the end, this is the insurance companies getting carte blanche and the Congress really giving up its power to the insurance companies. Why that happens is anybody's guess.
Well, we know why it happens, and that's pretty much the topic of every episode of MediaMonarchy.com. And isn't it interesting how many clips we end up grabbing from places like Fox now? Because again, the fake party they're fakely against is now in favor, so they do slightly harder hitting work. Just as we saw MSNBC doing it when Bush was in power. Left, right. Quickly, though, a link to Interpol running their international bioterror tabletop exercise. An interesting note from Aftermath News, what we just mentioned, but just another leg of the beast. Verichip buys Steel Vault, changes the name to Positive ID, and are working on creating micro-implant health record / credit score empire. Playing with weather stirs debate in China. That's from the AFP. And the last note is a video. Oh, no, there's more notes. It just keeps coming. There's a pandemic plague training going on in Canada. More drills. More bioterror. The money scam and the bio scam seem to be the biggest black ops running on the grand chessboard right now. At least the stuff that's put up in front of our eyes. Last few notes. On the Econo crash, sharp rise in 500,000 Norwegians coming down with swine flu in the last week. What was that thing we just noted about Norway? Oh, need for special vaccine, or rather special needles, delays the vaccine campaign in Norway. So because they're waiting on those special needles that we've speculated about, 500,000 people came down with swine flu last week in Norway. The last note again on Copenhagen comes from Naomi Klein, periodically writing articles up on The Guardian, of course also the author of No Logo and The Shock Doctrine. Seattle activists coming of age in Copenhagen will be very disobedient. Stew on that. We're down to the last half hour here, so we're going to have to move a little more quickly because we still have tons more things and tons more clips and news and politics to go over. Let's look at the Police State International now. Crowd control, drills, and behavior detection. Don't be alarmed by black helicopters over San Fernando Valley. This was November 7th. Black Hawk. Military urban warfare drills going on San Fernando Valley. If you're in the San Fern Valley in the coming days and are startled by a couple of loud military helicopters swooping around high-rise buildings, don't worry. LAPD said the Black Hawk helicopters were part of a flight training mission taking place after 5 p.m. Sunday in Central and West Valley areas. We wanted to let people know so nobody gets spooked and freaked out about it. So, and this wasn't one of those cases where they wanted people to get spooked and freaked out by it. Now, whether that was a low-flying Air Force One lookalike over New York, or terror drills off the Potomac on the 9/11 anniversary, or black helicopters over Portland, or black helicopters over Denver, or black helicopters over New Orleans, all documented recently on MediaMonarchy.com. They don't want you to get freaked out in this case. It's the opposite. They want it to be completely normalized, desensitizing you to the military performing domestic law enforcement. Don't see Obama rushing to help restore Posse Comitatus, do we? Pneumonic plague drill held in Illinois. The Vancouver police now have sound weapons, like we saw at the G20 recently in Pittsburgh, as we saw deployed in our theaters of operation abroad. Vancouver's prepping for next year's Olympics, and now the police have sound weapons. That's from the CBC. China conducts nuclear emergency exercise. India holds a maritime drill to prevent another 11/26. So that anniversary would be coming up where 1 year ago the coordinated carnage in Mumbai left 145 dead. And it was another case of a massive terror event that, of course, warranted three epic postings on MediaMonarchy.com, where we went into the false flag aspects, the UK intel ops, and questions and connections. So So again, in India, the Gurgaon Mall, that's in India, in a state in northern India, all those mall owners are beefing up security arrangements. Unsurprisingly, from the Telegraph, UK to quote-unquote spy on every phone call, email, and web search. The UK does Orwellian Big Brother right. The World Trade Organization sees the need for the right global governance to meet global challenges. That's from WTO.org. Department of Homeland Stupidity readies plan to track foreigners flying from the U.S. Not to the U.S., from the U.S. And again, at U.S. airports, TSA officers covertly monitor travelers' behavior. They're called behavior detection officers. And if you'd like a little flashback, we go back to July 2008 on Media Monarchy, TSA performing emotional screening of passengers. Detroit council members carrying guns for safety. That's from DebtNews.com. Chicago kids arrested for a food fight. That's from NBCChicago.com. In my day, you didn't get arrested for starting a food fight. They just made you clean it. That's not how things go in the Police State International. Your kids will be arrested. And the last note on the Police State International, government will pay $3 million in the coffee table spying lawsuit. Let's quickly blast through all the latest 9/11 updates. Again, so much of what we see today in front of us is predicated on the official story of 9/11. Bin Laden, Bunker, Cross, Parliament, and Pandora's Box. Reuters says new Bin Laden tape is not new. This coming from Intel Center, of course, the firm that video experts have said lay on their watermark the same time that Al-Qaeda lays on their watermark, essentially that these videos are fake. Neil Krawitz said it, and then he recanted quickly. 9/11's delayed legacy, cancer for many rescue workers. That's from The Guardian. Plans for security bunker at World Trade Center still lacking. That's from the New York Daily News. An interesting note by way of 911blogger.com and wearechange.org. The guy who found the WTC cross, you know, this that famous bits of steel that look like a Christian cross, he's down with 9/11 truth.
Do you have any words on this 8th anniversary of September 11th?
Yeah. Is it a shirt you wear?
Yes.
I believe. Is it a shirt he wears? Is it a shirt he wears?
Yes, I believe.
Because it is true.
Because
they cannot prove otherwise. There's no manifest to the jets that knocked out the Pennsylvania jet.
Flight 93.
Yeah, there's no manifest to those jets that were flying alongside.
What about our air defense response in that day?
There's no reason why they can't explain why there's so many flashes alongside the building.
As it's coming down.
That was coming
down. Or seven took too long to come down. That was full of technology that could be seen by human eyes. It had to be destroyed.
Right.
Otherwise, it couldn't get all the insurance on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
They took it down.
First responder Frank Sileccio, who discovered the famous steel cross recovered from Ground Zero, supports 9/11 truth. Swedish Member of Parliament. He says leading politicians support the 9/11 truth movement. Swedish Member of Parliament pledged support for a new investigation into the events of 9/11. That guy's name is Egon Frid. More updates on Pandora's Black Box, the documentary from pilots for 9/11 truth going into the flight of American 77, and on it goes. HistoryCommons.org and their latest successful FOIA requests. And an interesting note from TruthAlliance.net, 300-seat airliner crash test will help prove official 9/11 story false. Basically, TV station's going to run a big test where they crash a big, huge commercial jetliner into the ground. But the update from this morning and what we hit, and it's all over the front of Google News right now, New York trial for key 9/11 suspects. Alleged 9/11 mastermind KSM will be sent from Gitmo to New York for trial in a civilian court. Obama let that little nugget go while, again, he's running around the East. Quickly now, we're going to get into our second massive posting surrounding last week's shooter event at Fort Hood in Texas. We went over the tons of questions and anomalies and oddities that, again, anytime you see an event like this, I've been doing this kind of study for a while now, and I'm not one of these people that says everything's a conspiracy. The Illuminati pulls every string and pushes every button and makes everything happen. But there are certain events, as I watch them start to play out, set my BS meter off. And this one is one of those cases. Fort Hood false flag. Updates on the oddities of the Hassan case. Of course, the flashback to the original post on MediaMonarchy.com from last week on Guy Fawkes Day. Remember the 5th of November. 13 dead, 31 wounded in mass shooting at Fort Hood. Let's break it down with a great piece from Paul Joseph Watson. Everything about Nigal Malik Hassan screams patsy. The Empire Strikes Back. Right when public support for the occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan sinks to all-time lows, an anti-war Islamic extremist with links to suicide bombers goes on a shooting rampage at a U.S. Army base, reinvigorating support for the war of terror and demonizing opposition to it as anti-American extremism. The scam would be believable if it wasn't so perfectly staged. Without getting into convoluted conspiracy theories about mind control and whatever else, not that they aren't without merit, the facts that we already know about Hassan and his behavior prior to the deadly shootings just screams out patsy and setup and almost exactly mirrors the other terror scams the Empire's run in the past. Just like the would-be liquid bombers that was supposedly planning on bringing down multiple airliners in August 06 who were caught on CCTV buying bulk supplies of cake in the very hours before the plot. Hassan's pre-shooting behavior contradicts completely the idea that he was preparing for a deadly rampage. Shortly before the massacre, Hassan was caught on camera shopping in a convenience store located on the Army base, laughing and joking. Is this the behavior of a man psychologically readying himself for the high-intensity horror of gunning down dozens of his colleagues, or someone unaware of what was to follow? We learn that Hassan showed no signs of worry or stress when stopped at 7-Eleven for his daily breakfast of hash browns, said Jeannie Strickland, the store's manager. He came in Thursday morning just like normal, nothing weird, nothing out of the ordinary. CNN feverishly seized upon the CCTV footage and began broadcasting it relentlessly, because Hassan is seen wearing Arab garb and a Muslim headdress, fitting the carefully prearranged stereotype perfectly. The smiling assassin? Hassan's pre-rampage behavior is completely at odds with the idea of him preparing to massacre more than a dozen of his colleagues. Just like the 7-7 bombing patsies who were filmed laughing and joking, getting into arguments, and generally doing everything a terrorist would want to avoid, Hassan's pre-attack behavior should set alarm bells ringing. Just like the 7-7 bombing patsies and the liquid bombing patsies, the description of Hassan by those reinforcing the official characterization of him as a vengeful jihadist is completely at odds with how his own family members saw him. Hassan's cousin laughed when an interviewer asked him if the shooter was violent. He was just normal, loved sports, never gotten into trouble. His parents didn't want him to go in the military. He said, no, I was born and raised here. I'm going to do my duty to the country. The backdrop behind Hassan's alleged motive for the rampage also represents an inch-perfect staging, or rather, pitch-perfect, perhaps, for subsequent characterization of those opposed to the war of terror as lunatics, crackpots, and extremists. In the hours after the event, we were told that Hassan was upset about being deployed to Iraq at the end of the month. Then this mutated into the notion that Hassan was anti-war, and later we were informed that he was facing an FBI investigation for expressing sympathy with suicide bombers. The fact that this was known by authorities 6 months ago, and still Hassan was not only allowed to remain on the Army base, but also invited to participate in Homeland Security exercises, only raises more red flags. Then the lurid details began to really pour in to reinforce the Islamic terrorist stereotype. Hassan screamed, Allah Akbar, before opening fire, and he made outlandish comments concerning U.S. foreign policy. As writer Michael Yaki highlights in the San Francisco Guardian, the media characterization of Hassan as a Muslim terrorist was assumed by default, and almost from the first moment it seemed as though news anchors were reading from a script prepared well in advance. You wouldn't really see Anderson Cooper referring to Columbine, Klebold, and Harris as American Protestants. But moving quickly, and here are the pertinent questions. Why were initial reports of the three shooters reversed? Why were two alleged shooters taken into custody but quickly released? We went over all this last week, that again, all the initial reporting said three shooters, two captured, one was dead, and then it turns out there was one shooter and he's alive. Here's a quick mention from the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, talking about Hassan and the Fort Hood massacre.
Without having any other details, I'd like to open it up to those of you in the working media for any questions that you may have.
What are the latest numbers you're hearing, Governor?
The latest numbers that we have are that there are were three shooters. One was killed, two in custody. There's upwards of 20 injured, and I think the last number I had, nine were killed.
What can you tell us about the shooters?
I don't have any information directly about the shooters. I think it's a bit premature to be reporting anything that hadn't been confirmed from an appropriate source.
Three shooters. It seems like it'd be harder to notice, you know, if it were one shooter and then, oh, it's three, or there's three or all. No, that's actually just one. The disparity. Quickly, let's try and blast down all these related updates connected to Hassan and the Fort Hood possible false flag question mark. We note that, of course, he gets connected to 9/11 terrorist. Joe Lieberman's going to probe the terrorist attack. He's a homegrown terrorist. We've got tons of videos from Raw Story, Raw Replay. Fox host suggests special screenings for Muslims in the military. Fort Hood suspects links to Imam under scrutiny. Hassan's family held funeral at mosque of 9/11 hijackers. Government determined to connect Hassan and Al-Qaeda. Glenn Greenwald of Salon gets into the media orgy of rumors, speculations, and falsehoods. Interestingly enough, Representative Pete Hoekstra noted that he was getting no cooperation for a Fort Hood probe. And then he apparently revealed information about the shooter. So we get more partisan fake left-right politics from Think Progress and Rachel Maddow and MSNBC and the left gatekeeper, left hangout, limited hangout, left cover. Maddow rips Hoekstra for leaking sensitive national security info, where we note that if the tables were turned like they were before, they'd praise this guy for being a hero whistleblower, and the phony left-right paradigm goes on. But the oddities and the questions. Again, legitgov.org has the rundown on all the oddities of Fort Hood. You know where Hassan went to school? Virginia Tech. That's just one connection that I'm drawing between Fort Hood, Virginia Tech, and the massive documentation on legitgov.org. Alleged Fort Hood shooter frequented local strip club. Strip club visits would contradict the contrived stereotype of Hassan. More from Corruption American Style, Jihadi Deja Vu, Hassan, 9/11 Muslims in strip clubs. UPI editor equates 9/11 truth activists with Fort Hood killer. Copycat Effect gets into the wake of Fort Hood. Articles from Richard Cook. Interviews with Alex Jones on Press TV out of Iran. And then the latest updates were that the gunman is conscious. He was awake and talking. And then we had Veterans Day and Obama got to talk about the massacre and the wars, and this is why we fight. getting into all the rah-rah nationalism that we're only going to see more of. Tragedy rocks military grappling with mental health issues. Fort Hood focusing on healing after shootings. We've got video and, again, transcripts of Obama speaking at Fort Hood Memorial Service. Chicago's Mayor Daley blames Fort Hood on America's love of guns. And then from the Washington Post, Hassan did not formally seek to leave the military. And then the updates from the last several hours. Fort Hood shooting suspect charged officially with 13 counts of murder. And the latest this morning is that he is probably paralyzed from the waist down. Now, virtually every day, or at least since this posting, just a couple of days ago, that every day since Fort Hood, there was another violent event in the States as what we've called the mass murder contagion rages on. That was the gunman killing one in Orlando. And again, we've talked about the copycat effect and the clustering. So more on the Orlando shooting from the Orlando Sentinel and the AP. We again note that all the shooters pretty much always linked to psychiatric drugs. Seattle police suspect in slaying of officer is a lone domestic terrorist. That's another event. That's from CNN. One dead, three injured in Vail, Colorado bar shooting. Son of Washington State Lieutenant Governor shot in attempted murder-suicide. Possible hostage situation went down in Jefferson City, Missouri. Gunman in custody after taking administrator hostage at New York High School. Two dead in shooting at an Oregon clinic. An Iraq veteran killed while installing cable television. We get a comment on this post. Fort Hood false flag updates on the oddities of the Hassan case. A comment from Mouser, where they say, Fort Hood was a false flag. Hassan was a patsy. He never fired a single shot on Thursday, November 5th. The event was staged by government agents, 3 to 5 gunmen, to further support the empire's wars of exploitation against Middle Eastern Muslim countries. Hassan will never be able to speak to a neutral third party because he would reveal he never even held a gun that day. Great risk. He will be suicided. That's just a comment to this posting on MediaMonarchy.com. Isn't it amazing the way the memes all swirl around each other? So the way we're going to have to bring an end to this episode, if we go back to Tuesday, November 10th, 2009, where I posted at the start of the day, in the morning, Virginia governor cleared the way for the D.C. sniper's execution. And as we note, fittingly, this execution comes as the mass murder contagion is once again raging across America. The initial pre-execution report from the Associated Press, Governor Tim Kaine denied clemency Tuesday for sniper John Allen Muhammad, clearing the way for him to be executed for the attacks that terrorized the nation's capital region for 3 weeks in 2002. Muhammad died by lethal injection Tuesday night at Greensville Correctional Center in Jarrett, Virginia.
Report, repeat, report order. Allow officers to enter the cell door. At that point, probably put some handcuffs on him, also something on his ankle. Once he is under control and restrained, he'll be escorted by those officers into the chamber. He'll be placed on gurney, he'll lie down, and several stretches around his ankles, around his midsection, his arms, and across his chest will hold him to the gurney.
James D. Morgan.
James L. Sonny
Buchanan. Fred Kumar
Wallachar.
Sarah Ramos.
Rory Lewis Rivera.
Pascal Charlotte.
Dean Harold Myers.
Kenneth Harold Bridges.
Linda Franklin.
Conrad E. Johnson.
I'm here for some closure. I'm probably the last victim was my co-worker, Conrad Johnson. I received a call that morning that he had been shot, and I dispatched a couple of people to run up there and find out what was going on. After then, it was one of the worst days of my life. So I have been waiting for it since. I've been waiting for it since.
Too long for that day.
See, that's that day. I've been waiting since then. Okay, so it's here. I pull it out every year and wear it on that day. So I can put it up tonight. And maybe I won't have to wear it next year.
His last meal was chicken and red sauce, as he called it, and he had some cake. Mr. Muhammad maintains his innocence in this case, and he always has. So he is not remorseful, although he does extend his condolences to the family. What these families went through was tragic on every level. And given the injustices in this case, what Mr. Muhammad went through is equally as tragic. And even on his deathbed, he will express his righteous indignation for his own execution.
Right, the execution of John Allen Muhammad has been carried out under the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Death was pronounced at 9:11 p.m. There were no complications. Mr. Muhammad was asked if he wished to make a last statement. He did not acknowledge this or make any statement whatsoever.
The lawyers and the family of John Muhammad would like to make the following statement. The execution of John Muhammad will raise a lot of different feelings. The family is devastated by the tragic shootings of September and October 2002, and the broader community affected by those crimes. We sympathize with the families and loved ones who have to live the pain and loss of those terrible days. Our sympathies also extend to the children of John Muhammad, who with humility and self-consciousness
lost a father
today, and a member of their family. To all those families and the countless citizens across the country bore witness and continue to do so to those tragic events, we renew our condolences and we offer our prayers for a better future.
Now, Mike over on tragedyandhope.com puts it quite simply. It's interesting that the Fort Hood event corresponds so closely with the execution of John Allen Muhammad, the D.C. sniper. We're not implying these two are purposefully connected, just noting the impact on aggregate thinking. By returning the D.C. sniper to the front page, the concept of Muslim terrorists within our military is reinforced, not implying that John Allen Muhammad was a Muslim terrorist either, just noting how the commonality of his last name with the founder of Islam plays upon our minds. Additionally, the 9/11 meme is reinforced. The execution took place at 9:11 p.m., and in reading many of the stories, one is quickly reminded that the car which Muhammad conducted his assassinations was purchased on September 11th, 2002. The memes swirl around, my friends. I find it fascinating, enlightening, scary, funny. And that's why I do MediaMonarchy.com. I hope you enjoy the show. If you do, please share it. Please spread the word. Help get this information out. Again, forewarned is forearmed. We're not going to have time to get into the last post. We almost made it through everything on episode 149 of MediaMonarchy.com. So you're going to have to wait to cover or just go there yourself and read about media memes, the greenwash, Lou Dobbs, an immortal technique. So my friends, once again, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, we close out with a quick mention of just a couple of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. We had Northrop Grumman out of Pasadena, Maryland. We had the Panda Restaurant Group out of Rosemead, California. They Googled Broken Trust video. And finally, early this morning, the big brother corporation, British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, out of London. They were going way back on MediaMonarchy.com, reading about how Putin's dog finally got its long-promised GPS collar. My friends, you know that next week is the 150th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. I hope you'll be there with me. I want you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.